Hey there, Tailgate Nation. The Grill Sergeant, John Largent. We are still on the road, but we're going to have a brand new episode next week, Thursday, July 23rd. An all-new show, an all-new episode of Tailgate Radio. But until then, this is the last best of edition for the summer of 2015, and it's a great one. It's with former Denver Broncos quarterback and gunslinger Jake the Snake Plummer. We know you'll enjoy this episode and this great interview we had with Jake back from last fall. Thanks again for joining us, and thank you for downloading Tailgate Radio and making us one of the fastest growing podcasts in the sports and recreation category. Enjoy the show.
From coast to coast and border to border, it's Tailgate Radio. Here's your host, the Grill Sergeant, John Legend.
Up in the parking lot, got the bedroom lights and the grill is hot. On your walk, get set, baby, ready or not, we gonna get some. We got ribs and things, chicken and baked beans, plates and styrofoam, we came to get it on. Daylight and dark, whenever we all park, just get some. Cause everybody wants some.
All right, folks, welcome back to Tailgate Radio, and this time I want to bring in my very special guest this week. He is a former Pac-10 Player of the Year. He also went on to have a great storied career with the Arizona Cardinals and the Denver Broncos, a 10-year NFL vet. Welcome into Tailgate Radio, Jake the Snake Plummer.
Hey, how's it going today, guys?
Fantastic, Jake. So you had an exciting night, it sounds like, with some Halloween activities going on?
Oh yeah, you know, it's as your kids grow up, my oldest is 4, it gives new meaning to all the fun holidays after trick-or-treating and getting all our candy, all the loot out and organizing it, and before he went to bed, he said, so what's next after Halloween? Said, it's Thanksgiving, it's not as exciting as Halloween, but it's still a good one, but we had a great time, and we were trick-or-treating around the neighborhood, and just did it like brought back old good memories growing up when I was a kid.
That's great. Well, speaking of growing up, you're from Idaho. A lot of people don't know about it, and Idaho, to me, is one of the most beautiful states in the country. How did growing up in Idaho, in that whole area, shape and develop you as a young person?
Well, it was a great place to grow up. Boise, back when I was born in 74, wasn't quite like it is today. There was, around 65,000, 70,000 people, and it kept growing and growing, but we had a great time growing up as kids, you know, able to ride our bikes everywhere and had good schools and had family close. And I was lucky when I was real young, I got to spend some time in the Sawtooth Mountains. Our family moved up to the mountains to go live up there. So I spent a couple years of my early childhood life, 3, 4, or 5 years old, up in the Sawtooth Mountains, playing around in creeks and streams and hiking in the sawtooths. And really good for a kid to learn how to be away from a little bit, not society, but just be out in nature and be creative and have fun. So I was very blessed that way. And then growing up the rest of the time, spent a lot of time in North Idaho with my dad up in Coeur d'Alene, which is beautiful. And like you said, Idaho is a very, kind of not the most sought-out destination by a lot of people, but once people come check it out, they always come back. It's one of those kind of places.
Yeah, it's one of those best-kept secrets. You almost don't want to tell too many people about it, or they'll be moving in there. I know folks over in Montana have had that problem with all the folks from the West Coast moving up there. So, yeah, keep Idaho to yourself. It's such a beautiful place.
Well, you'd like to share it because it is pretty amazing, especially the Sawtooth Mountains. If anybody's never been to the Sawtooth Mountains, they're pretty amazing. A lot of natural lakes up there. You can go up and go hiking and get away from everybody and be removed up in a really beautiful place that really you wonder how it was formed and what took place. But we get up there as a family a lot, go backpacking up in the high mountains and have a good old time.
That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah, I just remember when I'd go visit Boise, we would always check in at the Galaxy Cafe. I don't even know if that place is there, if you even remember that place. It was like an old 50s diner.
think I remember seeing that. I don't think it's there anymore. A lot of those old places, got bought out or, phased out or whatever. But people don't know finger steaks originated in Boise, Idaho. And people might wonder out there listening, what's a finger steak? But it's a piece of steak breaded and then deep fried, and then you use it, have dipping sauces, and they're really, really good. And that's where they originated, was in Boise, Idaho, at the Torch Lounge. So a little fun fact for people out there wondering if they've ever even heard of finger steaks, but, let alone where they originated. They're good stuff.
Well, coming out of Idaho as a blue chipper, I'm sure you were heavily recruited by schools all over the place, and you ended up going to Arizona State. What were the factors that went into going from moving to Idaho down to the desert in Arizona?
Well, there are a lot of things. As a young kid, you're 18 years old, coming out of high school, presented with a really big opportunity and a huge decision that you have to make at such a young age, and you really learn to kind of grow up quickly, and decisions made at that time of your life, you never know how they're going to play out. But I was recruited heavily by a lot of different schools. The very first call I ever received on, I think it was June 4th, the first day they could call, I got a early morning wake-up call from Coach Bruce Snyder, who's the head coach at Arizona State for the Sun Devils, and he offered me a scholarship day one, first day they could contact you, and said I was their number one QB that they wanted, and that had held a lot of weight when the other schools were coming into the game late, coming into the game middle of the season, saying, oh, we want to recruit you and offer you a scholarship. I always thought back that first day in ASU's commitment to being the first ones to call me. And then the big thing was when the home visit, when Bruce Snyder looked me in the eye and said, with you coming to Arizona State, I believe we'll have a chance to win a national championship. So a young kid from Boise, Idaho, I was weighing about 170 with a bad-looking mullet and skinny, just scraggly kid. For a coach to tell me that, that held a lot of weight. It resonated with me, and made the decision over Washington State was my other choice, because that was kind of close to where some family was up in North Idaho, and I think I made the right decision. Ultimately, it was a few tough years at Arizona State, but we damn near won a national championship, and Coach Snyder put a lot of pieces together and was a great coach, and I had a great time. A big difference from Idaho to the desert, but I was glad I got away from home and got a chance to grow up on my own and experience college at a great institution.
Yeah, and didn't you guys go undefeated? Was it your senior year? And then you had the And then the Rose Bowl lost. Was that to Ohio State? I'm trying to remember that.
Yep, we lost to Ohio State. We were undefeated going in, and actually had a chance to share the national title possibly if Florida State was playing Florida, I think, and if Florida State would have won, then we both would have been undefeated. But we ended up losing that game. It was a tough one. I think we just needed a few more seconds on the clock. I think we would have scored to possibly win. But it was just a hard way to end the college career. A lot of guys, it was really tough because it was their last football game that they ever played in. I knew I had a chance to go on to the next level. I believed I had a chance. And to end up my career like that on that kind of a season, it's great memories. We were undefeated and had just a great time. Our senior year culminated a lot of losses prior to that, and a lot of learning experiences the few years leading up to that to really put together an amazing season, and one that they'll be talking about for a long time. Even though we lost in the Rose Bowl, it was still just a great fun time for all of us.
Yeah. Now, if I'm trying to remember, now when you were drafted by the Arizona Cardinals, I think you were drafted in the second round, but did you guys play in the same stadium that you played in college?
Yep, Sun Devil Stadium right there in Tempe, between the A Mountain and the little Tempe Buttes there. It's great stadium, a really fun place to play. In today's day and age with the NFL stadiums, it wasn't up to par, with the suite levels and all the bells and whistles. For a college stadium, there's nothing better. I mean, I played in front of, a couple of games my senior year in front of 70,000 plus, which was just amazing. To go from struggling early in my college career where we might have close to a packed house a couple times, to going to where we had, four or five games my senior year where it was packed to the gills. It was just an awesome experience. And then getting to play there again as a pros, it was a nice transition. It gave me a chance to kind of think back to my days as a Sun Devil, go out out there. I remember my first preseason game playing against the Oakland Raiders, and it was nerve-wracking. I mean, I'm playing against NFL football players, and I thought I had to do something real special, but it was still football, so I just kind of thought back to playing, and I said, we're just playing the Trojans today. All it is the USC Trojans. Go out there and just play football, and it kind of helped, and being in you know, the comfortable confines of Sundell Stadium helped ease a little bit of that stress and nervous. It's definitely nice to play a lot of games on that beautiful grass.
Yeah, did you feel like it gave you a competitive advantage? Because, you know, a lot of those fields have the, you know, I played high school ball, but even at that level, I remember that there were certain stadiums where you remember certain areas that may give you, where there's a dip or there's something going on. Did that make you feel more comfortable out on that field as a pro?
Yeah, it was just the whole experience of being in that stadium a bunch, and then looking down at the south end of the stadium, and there was the intercollegiate athletic building where we did all of our study halls and had all of our meals and all of our film sessions. You know, the building that I spent my 4 years in college in was right there at the end of the south end zone. So in a way, it was very comforting, and to know that that there might be some of the administrators or tutors or anybody up there watching us play on Sunday, it was definitely a comforting feeling. And I love that grass there in Tempe and at Sun Devil Stadium. There's no better playing surface. I mean, it's fast, it's real, it's actually grass. You get grass stains on your uniforms, which I love today's day with all the fake grass. It's weird. You go in to turn on a game, you don't know if it's the first play of the game or the last. Guys don't even have a grass stain on them. So I miss some of that, but getting back to Tempe, I try to get back there at least once or twice a year to catch a Sun Devils game. And this year I'm going to actually catch a Cardinals game out of their new stadium, which will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that. You spent the bulk of your NFL career, I think you had a 10-year career, and most of it was in Arizona, and you spent some time with the Broncos. But what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen from when you were an active player in the league to now?
Well, I think the biggest difference you see, I witnessed this a couple weekends ago. The touchdowns now are going up a lot more. Touchdowns being thrown by quarterbacks. But when I saw something interesting, I think it was Emmanuel Sanders with the Broncos. He went up high for a ball in the end zone. I mean, he was off the ground by a couple feet. There were three defenders around him. And back in my day, if you threw a ball up there like that with three defenders, someone was going to be laying there on the turf when that play was over, and most likely the ball was going to be bouncing around, and it was going to be the next down. Well, he went up and caught the ball and came down, and the defender was right there, but he didn't even hit him. So the game has changed. You know, it's not as violent as it was, and I think with the violence getting curtailed and being flagged and keeping these guys away from those violent, vicious hits, it's allowed for offenses to flourish and actually throw 50-plus TDs in one season. You know, a lot of those touchdowns are high-thrown balls that are a receiver or nobody. But back in those days, if I threw a ball like that, my receivers were going to be over there on the sideline grimacing in pain, holding their ribs, saying, come on, Snake, you got to put that on my numbers. And that's a big change to me. I mean, I think it's good in a way, and then also it's bad in a way, because I think the game is violent. And if we're going to kid ourselves to try to make it safer, that's like saying riding a motorcycle, we're going to make it safer to ride your motorcycle in traffic. No, it's dangerous. It's dangerous, and you could very likely get hurt badly in a crash. But just like football, it's a violent game. They're trying their best to make it a little less non-violent. That there's going to be a moment where we turn back to just letting guys go play.
The players are just so much bigger and so much faster and so much stronger that you know, I read somewhere that every play, a guy's on the line, it's equivalent to a 25 or 30 mile an hour car wreck. So that's violence.
Those linemen that hit their heads over and over, and people think that head trauma comes from like big, huge, crashing blows, but it's not necessarily that. It's the repetitive blows to the head, and that's what these old linemen do, and that's why you see them having a lot less of a life to live after the game, you know, short lifespans. And it's a sad thing, but I think we all knew getting into it that, hey, football's a violent sport, and you know, you're probably going to come out of it with some bumps and bruises. That's just the way it goes. It's funny you mentioned the size of guys. I saw a little deal on TV. I was watching that 30 for 30 about the Miami University, the U. What a great, great piece they put together. And I was looking at they showed a roster all these defensive ends, O-linemen, they were weighing about 240, 250 pounds. And I was laughing, going, wow, that's what a significant change we've seen in just the players' weight. And that's in 20 years. Guys are now, you know, 310 pounds, still the same speed, able to run around like that. That's doing nothing but one thing, and that's causing a lot more violent collisions. And you've got high school kids even now that are weighing 250 pounds that are ripped up and muscular, and that's just scary. You know, I don't know. I think it's a game that's trending in the direction of more violence, even though they're trying to make it safer, just because of what we're talking about, the size and the speed of the guys is trickling all the way down into high school and even into junior high.
Do you think the efforts that the NFL and other organizations are doing to bring that head trauma and things to the forefront, do you think that's helpful in the league, or do you think it's kind of masking the fact that, as you said, they're continuing to get bigger, faster, stronger?
I think it's their effort to try to save the game. It's definitely, it needs to be brought to the forefront. I think they need to understand that the game is violent and they should be flagging illegal hits with guys coming in on, you know, SportsCenter still will show the big, huge tackle, even though it's an illegal hit and a spear. They'll still show that over and over if it's one of their stars. And that to me is wrong. I think they should show the form tackles and the guys that are doing it right and coming in with their shoulder. And yeah, there's going to be contact with your head because you can't avoid that. But if you're coming in and trying to move that out of the way and then you hit him with your shoulders, that should be a good hit. That's not targeting your job. That's hitting the guy in front of you and not letting him get the first down, which is what we're all paid to do in the NFL, is to make sure to do your job. So I think that there's definitely got to be a shift in that. You can't take away the hard hits because it's a man's job out there, and there's some big time guys that are doing their job. I just think that, you know, going back to fundamentals is key. Keep teaching kids how to tackle right, but it's hard to say they ever learn how to do that when you put helmets on them when they're 7 years old. You got a helmet on you, it's like a weapon. Give a kid a little sword, what's he going to go do? He's going to go hit the dog with it. You put a helmet on him, what's he going to do? He's going to go hit somebody with it. It's a weapon. So taking helmets off of kids, I think till they're at least 13 or 14, would be one way to save the game and at least try to help these kids save their brains so they don't have more propensity to have that problem down the road when they get older.
I'm here with Jake Plummer, 10-year veteran of the NFL, and man, doing my research and my crack research team, which is me and my laptop. I saw that you had, after you left the NFL, you had quite an accomplished handball career. Tell me about that, because that's interesting to me, because that I wouldn't have seen that coming.
Well, it's a real sport, you know. It's one of the original games there ever was. Handball is a ball and a wall. And if you got hands, even if you don't have hands, I know guys that play with fingers missing, and they get out there and smack it around. You know, it's a fun game. I got introduced to it as a youngster. My dad was a Washington State champ and Idaho State champ back in the late 70s, early 80s. He got us all playing the game. Me and both my older brothers play. It's a really great environment. It's a, you know, life sport. Try to teach youngsters how to play it because they're all focused on trying to become the best they can, and whether it's baseball, football, or basketball, whatever their chosen sport is. Sports all come to an end at one point in their lives, and especially football, because you can't just go play football when you're 50. But handball, you can play until you're, you know, in your 80s, and that's why I love it. It's a great sport that enhances all your athletic abilities, your hand-eye coordination, your quickness, your mental toughness, your endurance. It's a great sport. I try to teach as many kids as I can because, like I said, it's a life sport. It's something they can do and compete at and have fun at. You know, the handball tournaments are a blast. Everyone's having a good time and competing, and it's a sport that I'll be playing hopefully till I'm dead and gone, but we'll see that along with golf once I get slowing down. But handball is my sport of choice now. It's for anybody. It's for all people that like a challenge, because the hardest thing a lot of people come to see when they play handball is that using your off hand. So if you're right-handed, you got to learn how to use your hand. And I think it brings balance to your body. It brings balance to your whole system. You got to use your weak hand, and it takes an extreme mental toughness to get over missing until finally finally you get to where you learn how to get it back with your offhand, and then the game picks up and it becomes a lot of fun. So, yeah, I try to teach youngsters out there, and if anybody listening has any interest and they get back in touch with you, send them my way. I'll show them where a game is or where they can learn how to play and get gear and get out there at the ball and hit it against the wall.
One of the things that that I am excited to talk about, too, is you've got your own podcast. And I listened to several episodes, and, man, those things are very enjoyable. It's called Snake Steaks. Tell us about Snake Steaks and how that got started.
Well, thanks for listening, for one, and I try to keep it interesting. And, you know, everyone's got a voice these days, and I try to bring something fresh to it, try not to be too negative. In today's world, a lot of these pundits and a lot of these guys talking are pointing out all the negatives and what could have been better and what they should have done. I like to try things that happened and say, hey, this was awesome to watch and a good time. And then Sports USA Media was the organization that approached me to do a podcast. They have a few different guys doing some podcasts, Fred Dreyer and Joe Morgan, Lee Steinberg, and myself included. And, you know, it's a great chance for me to kind of emote, get things off my chest, remember old times playing. It's been kind of like therapy for me to get to interview some of my old buddies and have them on as guests. It's a great time. It's kind of a weekly deal we do. It lasts from 30 to 40 minutes, and it's brought on a lot of new challenges and some fun things, and you know, just kind of having fun with my post-career, trying to keep people enlightened a little bit. And Snake Steaks is just that opportunity for me to do that, you know, have a good time with it. Like I said, you have a podcast, you know what it's like. You just try to find interesting stuff out there. There's such a wealth of knowledge out there and so many interesting little tidbits to share with people, but that's what I try to do.
Yeah, what's the best way that folks can subscribe to that or download it so they can start listening to it every week?
Yeah, you can find it at sportsusamedia.com, podcast1, that's podcast1.com. You can even go to iTunes and find it, or there's a TuneIn app for your smartphone. And, you know, it's on-demand radio, pretty much. You know, I try to have a good time with it, and I tell people all the time, listen, if you like it, keep listening. That's all right with me. It's not going to hurt my feelings. So have fun with it. If it's something you like to listen to, you know, have fun with it. My dad listens to every one of them. He thinks it's great, but that's my dad, so, you know, he's going to love it no matter what. But I'm having fun with it. It's a good experience, and I'm doing some TV work with the Pac-12 networks and also doing some color commentary with Sports USA Media on the radio. And having a podcast really just helps my brain keep moving and getting old stuff out of there, and definitely helps with being alert and knowing how to speak in public, which is a good trait to have for anybody that's in our industry and gets done. It's a great way to stay tied to the game, but also mentally challenge yourself to stay fresh and up to date.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier in our interview that you like to get back to Tempe from time to time, and speaking of that, coming up this Sunday on November 9th, you've got the Jake the Snake Tailgate Throwdown. And folks can find out more about that at tailgatewithjake.com. But tell us what's going on over there at University of Phoenix Stadium this Sunday.
Well, one of my sponsors for the podcast is King Controls, and they are the innovator and creator of a little portable satellite called the Tailgater. So it's about a 10-pound unit that's in a little enclosed, huge little plastic, looks like a big, huge Tupperware. You can take it anywhere you want. You plug it into a dish receiver and to your TV, and voila, you got TV wherever you want. And with tailgating going on, the amount of people that tailgate nowadays at games, it's a great, you know, little product that everyone that does the tailgating scene, they should have one, because it's so easy. You push a button, it finds a satellite. So I met these guys out at Dish Summit out in Nashville, Tennessee, and we kind of formed a relationship. They started sponsoring the podcast, and I just wanted to help them, you know, try to get their word out and get people to check this tailgater out. So I said, let's do some tailgates. And no better way than to be sitting there with one of these on, with the game going, cooking some brats, drinking some beer prior to a game. So we decided to throw down a tailgate. Tailgatewithjake.com is where you can go to check out the whole deal. And we're going to pick one winner that submits an entry form of why they tailgate and how long they've been doing it. And we get to pick which one we want to go hang out with. And they get a free tailgater satellite, a dish, receiver and dish programming for the rest of the NFL season. So it's going to be a fun deal. There's nothing better than tailgating. I mean, everyone's hopes are up. No one's won or lost the game yet, so you get to go out there with a fresh slate and have a good time, throw the football around and take some pictures and talk about the good old times. So for me, it's a lot of fun to see my fans, thank them in person for rooting for me and call them out if they booed me, tell them they shouldn't have done that, and just have a good time with it.
We're here with Jake the Snake Plumber, going to be out at the University of Phoenix Stadium for the Cardinals game this Sunday, November 9th. The tailgatewithjake.com. You want to jump on there and sign up. He may be at your next tailgate party out at the stadium this weekend. So, Jake, I want to thank you so much for coming in. And one more time, how can they listen to Snake's Takes every week to catch up with what you're doing? And as you said, an opportunity to kind of get things off your mind.
Well, you know, one thing they can do is follow me on Twitter. I have a Twitter account. It's @ Takes, and they can check me out there, and I'll be posting every podcast we do through sportsusamedia.com. That's one way to go find it, at their website or at podcast1.com, iTunes, or the TuneIn app for your smartphone. So anybody out there, you know, I'd love if you go listen to it, and then if there's something you think I should have done or said, or if you got questions for me or my guests, you can send me a tweet @ Snakes Takes, and we'll have your question on the show and reference you, and maybe they'll get some followers too. But yeah, anybody out there that wants to do it, I'd love to have you check it out, and I'm always open for suggestions on how to make it better or more entertaining also.
Well, we want to thank you for coming into Tailgate Radio this week. Before we go, what's your favorite tailgate food? We always ask our guests that come in, what do they prefer when they're out in the parking lot?
Man, there's nothing better than like pulled barbecue pork. That's about as good as it gets with some beans. But the one essential ingredient is having cold beer, because that all goes down better with a cold beer. And I have a good time out there tailgating. I get to see it from the other side when I was coming in on the bus, serious and getting ready for the game, and seeing all these people out having a blast. Now I get to be that in that group out there having a blast prior to the game. No stress, no worries, just a fan of the game having a good time.
I certainly want to thank you for coming in this week, and make sure you catch him over at Twitter, and make sure you listen to him every week on Snakes Takes. And if you're out in the Arizona and the Phoenix area, make sure you catch him out there this Sunday out there with Tailgate with Jake for the Jake the Snake Tailgate Throwdown. And we really appreciate you coming in this week to Tailgate Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, John. You have a good week.
You're listening to Tailgate Radio.
All right, folks, that's going to about do it for the last installment of the best of Tailgate Radio for the summer 2015. We've got a brand new show coming up this Thursday, July 23rd. You don't want to miss it. It's got a brand new sound, some great new content, and a whole lot more fun as we get ready for the wrapping up the summer and getting right into the football season in the fall. So for everybody here at the studios in San Antonio, Texas, I want to thank everybody for listening to Tailgate Radio. And as we always say, keep the drinks cold, the grill hot, and we'll see you in the parking lot live next week with a brand new show. Catch your asses on down the road. Have a great summer. We'll talk to you soon.